You're listening to Democracy Watch, the News Collective's weekly news report, bringing you alternative and undercover current affairs from Vancouver and the Lower Mainland. My name's Alex DeBoer.
I'm Max Newman.
I'm Arman Rana.
And I'm Joshua Azizi. It's Thursday, May 2nd at 5:02 p.m. We're broadcasting live from UBC's Vancouver campus on the ancestral, traditional, and unceded territories of the Hunkamanum-speaking Musqueam people.
Today's show is a close analysis of Monday's City Hall meeting, which myself and Sam Jones attended. Unfortunately, Sam couldn't be here for the show, but we have a few things to note from Monday. Firstly, council voted to delay a ban on single-use items.
Right, yeah, this ban on single-use items was originally set to take effect on the 1st of June this year and has now been postponed. This updated ban unrolls in two parts. On January 1st, 2020, a ban on foam cups and foam takeout containers will begin. Then, a few months later, in April 2020, the ban will extend to the unnecessary use of plastic straws.
Right. So the unnecessary use is how you put that. Can you tell me a bit about what that means?
Yeah. So while we were at City Hall, the city manager, Sadhu Johnston, conceded that the more staff looked into banning single-use items, the more complicated implementing a ban got. For example, some people with disabilities rely on bendable plastic straws to drink.
Right.
For that reason, staff are considering straws both as an accessibility item and as a disposable plastic item.
But there's also a cultural piece to it, too. So, like, bubble tea shops, they rely on straws to do business. And there's a class element as well, because, like, often nonprofits and small restaurants, they rely on foam containers for food because those materials are cheaper to purchase than most expensive, compostable go-to items. And the city also has to work out, like, composting regulations. Like, for example, compostable plastic straws currently don't biodegrade when they're littered or put in the city's green bins.
Another big thing that happened at City Hall was a vote on implementing 6 climate emergency steps.
Yeah, so the climate emergency response plan passed on Monday night, and the plan includes a set of ambitious tasks to be undertaken to address the threat of climate change in the city. The overall goal of this plan was to limit warming to 1.5 degrees since industrial times, as was recommended by the Paris Climate Accord. City Council plans on doing this by making what it calls, quote-unquote, 6 big moves.
Right. And so how did council vote on this climate emergency motion?
Well, the motion passed unanimously.
Okay.
But NPA Councillor Colleen Hardwick abstained from voting. We reached out to her for comment, but got nothing back.
Right. Yeah, it would be interesting to hear from her on why she abstained. And I understand Sam, who was also at City Hall on Monday, but can't be with us today in studio. He actually stayed till the very end of council, which is very good of him. And he attempted to talk to some of the councillors about this climate change vote.
Yeah, that's right. He was there till the very end and spoke with Councillor Fry briefly about whether this motion could trigger any backlash.
How vast changes in this proposal and potential controversies that may arise from, say, the densification of certain neighborhoods to make the walk and roll target of 90% possible, and electric vehicle only zones, which you see in the news quite a bit. Do you think there's, or have we seen in the news quite a bit since this came up, do you think there's any risk of a council in the future being elected with a mandate to reverse some of these changes that people may find more disruptive, or like certain councillors going against this, trying to chip away at it over time? Are you at all worried about that?
Well, I suppose there's always, we always have to temper whatever it is we do with the understanding that a future council may get elected as a reaction to whatever it is we do today. So everything has to be somewhat reasonable and tempered. I think when you talk about specific measures to address the climate change emergency, what I've noticed even in the last 4 years is a growing awareness amongst other municipalities and other councils and electeds and people who are running for public office that it's no longer a theory that climate change is a thing. It's actually a reality. And now, in fact, on my work with the Union of BC Municipalities, which is the cities and towns from across British Columbia, we were talking about this at the executive meeting recently, that whereas a lot of these local leaders were 10 years ago denying climate change and challenging the assumptions of it, today they're talking about climate change mitigation and how can they adapt and what can they do for resilience. So we're seeing the shift in perceptions. I guess Doug Ford just came out and talked about climate change in the context of the flooding in Ottawa And I think that tells you what you, the reality is that we've run out of options, and that I think most of us are at least aware of the challenges of climate change.
All right. And that was Pete Fry commenting on council's vote to approve six moves to deal with climate change in the city of Vancouver. Now we're going to move on to sort of the main focus of today's show, which was another vote that happened in council. And this vote was on property tax.
That's right. Another thing that happened in city council on Monday was like a restructuring of the city's property tax distribution, or like the share of how much, you know, residential and business properties pay.
Right.
So what council just narrowly voted to approve was a 2% shift in the total share of paid property taxes for business to residential property owners over a 3-year span.
So both last week and this past Monday, City Council heard from several business improvement associations, or BIAs. These groups spoke in favor of this 2% tax shift. The motion was originally proposed to shift the 2% tax burden immediately, but an amendment was added to make it more gradual over 3 years. The idea behind this amendment was to make the added burden on homeowners and renters slightly more palatable.
Right. So just to go back to the beginning here a bit, Armand, why was council even considering such a property tax shift?
In theory, this shift would ease the burden on small businesses that fear they are being driven out of the city by exorbitant property tax increases. Mm. However, the city management did not recommend approving this motion. They advised council that this tax shift would not effectively target small businesses.
Right. That's interesting. So, you know, most of the time, city council does vote according to what staff recommends. But in this case, they didn't. So what was your impression of council's response to the motion itself as it was proposed?
Council seemed very conflicted about this motion. It also divided the NPA. Three NPA councilors supported it and two opposed. Councilor Melissa DeGenova, who opposed the tax shift, was concerned about the impact on residents. Let's hear what she had to say.
About all of that, and I also think about the response that I got to a question that I asked staff, and very aware of this, you know, with the letter that we received from BC Nonprofit Housing Association, as well as the Co-op Housing Federation of BC. And the answer that I got as to how much this would affect them was that, you know, for families and people in poverty, even an extra $12 to $20 a month can mean the difference between nutritious food, swimming lessons for kids, and a field trip or a babysitter. And it does say that on average, even our VAHA units, that this will hit $60 to $70 per unit per month. And that really does concern me because... And to share a bit of a personal story, and I'm sorry, but I do get worked up over this because I do see it pitting groups against each other, and some of those families have small businesses and are trying to feed their families. But I had someone ask me for help the other day, and they were having a hard time feeding their family. And it really put things in perspective for me. Because my daughter right now thinks I live in a phone, because that's how I see her when I'm at council meetings, I FaceTime with her. And I thought, gee, you know, I was concerned about that, but I can't imagine what it must be like to be concerned to feed your child. So for that reason, I won't be able to support this amendment, but I do appreciate, and I want to thank Councillor Dominaro for putting this forward, because I do feel that there's a way to support small business, and there are efficiencies perhaps that we'll be able to find in the budget as we move forward. And this may have support and this may pass, but because of the response that I received from staff to my questions on that letter, and I hope that they were circulated. I don't know if they were, but I won't be able to support that amendment. Thank you.
All right, that was a lot of emotion that I was not expecting. So to be clear, Melissa DeGenova, MPA counselor, incumbent MPA counselor DeGenova, was not able to support this motion because She felt that it may force residential property owners to choose between feeding their kids and not. Is that what she was saying, Armand?
Yeah, she was concerned about the costs would put on certain residents would have slightly higher costs, and she was concerned that those residents would struggle to feed their family and pay day-to-day expenses.
Yeah, interesting. Wow. Okay. And so what? So on the other hand, we had Councillor Bly, who was in favor of the motion, and what was she arguing?
Yeah, she said it would provide small businesses some relief. Let's take a listen.
Okay.
I think finally, we've unanimously passed and will continue to talk tonight about this emergency climate report. Big move number one relies on small business being intact. We cannot walk and roll and carry home 48 rolls of toilet paper. We need to be able to go places where we can get six. And so, you know, I think that we have to really take this seriously. Otherwise, it is the Costco's, and it is the Starbucks. It is the Walmarts that are going to benefit at the end of the day. So I think I don't always take my 5 minutes. In fact, I rarely do. But you can see how impassioned I am with this, because I think it's so, so important. I, at 21, needed a job, had a baby, a small business hired me, and it got me here. End of story. Thank you.
Okay, interesting. Another pretty emotional comment from another NPA counselor, but on the opposite side. That was Councillor Rebecca Bly, talking about being 21, having a baby, needing a job, and the importance of small business in uplifting her. So pretty interesting, because when you look at this motion on its surface, the shift in tax burden is pretty small, and to the average person, it's not going to change their bill that much. But, when you add it up to, all the different businesses or different types of residential properties, co-ops, apartments, I don't know, it can have a big impact. And we're really seeing counselors be very thoughtful about that and consider it, how it may have affected them personally or could affect them personally. So anyway, Armand, could you tell us what happened in the end with this motion?
So a modified version of the motion passed 6-5 with Mayor Kennedy and 4 councillors voting against it. After the vote, Sam was able to speak with one city councillor, Christine Boyle, who voted against the motion. Here's what she had to say.
Well, what I heard pretty clearly from a number of our experts is that this isn't actually specifically a transfer to small business. It's a across-the-board tax break for all businesses, and I can't support a tax break for big businesses, for big multinationals in the city. It's not targeted to who needs it. It's not, I don't think, going to have the impact that we want, which is to support the small businesses in our neighborhoods. It is going to give a big break to big companies that don't need it at the expense of other priorities in this city. So it's not the kind of policy I want. And I am very keen to see us move forward on policies that really do give targeted support to the small and local businesses that we love in our neighborhoods.
All right, that was Christine Boyle.
Yeah, so the modified version of the bill will be phased in over 3 years, with 1% in the first year and 0.5% in the following 2 years. It also included language exploring other tools for providing tax relief to small businesses via the Intergovernmental Working Group. One of these options is a split assessment.
Right. And so, Armand, can you remind our listeners what a split property assessment is?
So currently, an underdeveloped property is assessed at its full potential.
Okay.
In other words, property values assigned based on best use. For example, if a property is zoned for a 6-story building but is currently occupied by a 1-story building, the assessed value would be that of a 6-story building, since that is the best use of the land.
Right.
In recent years, underdeveloped properties, which make up 21% of business properties, have faced the brunt of tax increases, with tenants sometimes paying taxes higher than their current rents. A split assessment would give cities the option to tax underdeveloped properties at a lower rate than their assessed potential value. This would lower the tax burden on underdeveloped properties, making it more in line with their current use.
Oh, yeah, but, like, were there going to be some obstacles to getting a split assessment?
Yeah, so council had found it difficult to in the past to convince the provincial government to make the changes necessary to implement a split assessment. For this reason, Councillor Pete Fry supported the modified version. Let's hear what he had to say in council.
I'm still challenged. I do recognize that we are hemorrhaging our small business areas and that we need to support small local serving businesses, and I'm not sure that this necessarily is the tool to do it, although I do recognize that it is a more moderate approach and it's a little bit more palatable to take on at least 1% in this first year, and then we can see about the rest. But, you know, as we were having this debate, I got an email from a friend of mine from the dog park who also has a pretty successful food manufacturing business that employs a bunch of people. And he's being forced out of the city. And he basically, paraphrasing, he writes that he's watching us on the live stream. The ship's pretty much sailed for his company, essentially being forced out of Vancouver to remain viable through growth. But the situation remains critical for many other businesses, with trickle-down effects staggering on a number of levels. We're an excellent example of that. Our taxes are now almost equal to our basic rent, mostly due to the best use approach, as well as the disproportionate burden imposed on small business. The 2% tax shift will help somewhat, but won't make the difference between life or death for a business. Split assessments, however, will. Well, we know split assessments are the beast we have to tackle here, but I'm reminded that I was here last year to speak in favor of Councillor Affleck, then Councillor Affleck's small business motion, and a lot of what he was asking about then still hasn't really manifested. I know that the split assessment argument and debate has been going on for a number of years, and it still hasn't manifested. I don't know that businesses can necessarily hang on as we try and have this conversation with the senior government to get us where we need to be. So I do think that it is important that we send those signals that we are supporting small business. Yeah, so I'm leaning towards supporting this.
So that was Councillor Fry. On the other hand, counter to what he said, city management says they're quite optimistic that the province could implement split assessment in the near future.
Yeah, we'll just have to wait and see. I believe summer is the projected time the province will be getting back to us on that. So anyway, thanks for presenting that, Armand. And we're going to take a really short break now for some PSAs and ads, and then we'll be back with more Democracy Watch on CITR 101.9 FM. Stay tuned.
There's only one way that old clunker is going to make you feel good again. Donate it to Bullying Canada. Check this out. Free towing or pickup of your old vehicle, a tax-deductible receipt, and a super easy process. Online at bullyingcanada.ca. Get rid of that old vehicle and feel good about supporting real solutions for change in your community. Donate your old or used vehicle to Bullying Canada today. Full details online at bullyingcanada.ca.
Am I wrong?
Man, they were nihilists, man.
Huh?
They kept saying they believed in nothing.
Nihilists. Me.
The Great Escape from Nihilism, Rediscovering Our Passion in Late Modernity by Dr. Gordon E. Karkner involves a journey out of the prison of contemporary nihilism and into a meaningful life trajectory. Rooted in the work of Canadian premier philosopher Charles Taylor, this book is a relevant read for students and faculty. You can find it at the UBC or Regent bookstores.
Who's the f***ing nihilist around here, you bunch of f***ing crybabies?
And we're back. You're listening to Democracy Watch on CITR 101.9 FM. So today we're rehashing Monday's City Hall meeting with a special focus on a property tax transfer motion that passed.
As we explained at the beginning of the show, City Council voted on a motion to implement a transfer 2% property tax from commercial to residential property owners over 3 years. On Tuesday, Alex and Amarn spoke to Green Councillor Pete Fry about why he voted in favor of the 2% property tax shift. In this interview, Councillor Fry explains why this tax shift is an important signal to small business that council is willing to do something to help keep them afloat. Let's take a listen.
motion to shift 2% of property tax from commercial properties to homeowners. And I'm wondering why you chose to support that.
Well, so first, there was a bit more to the motion than that. And, mm-hmm. and what the motion is in the immediate, it's a 1% shift this year. And then contemplates an additional 0.5 and another 0.5 over the two successive years. So that'd be, in total, the 2% shift over 3 years.
Correct.
Now, yeah. So the 1% shift for this year, that equals about $23 on a per $1 million of assessed value on a residential property that homeowners or residential properties would be paying more.
Okay.
So it's a fairly modest shift. But it's part of sending a signal to the beleaguered business community that after a considerable amount of inaction on this file, that we are at least taking it seriously. I would add that I did add some specific amendment language to the motion to try and in fact, Councillor Carleen Hardwick had a pretty tight motion that really explored the reality that we need to do more and instructing staff to look at how what we can do more. And I added some language to the effect that we could pursue ideas around granting and opportunities for smaller local legacy style businesses to, you know, support the kind of small businesses that make our city great and provide great jobs for folks who, you know, live and work in our city.
Did that amendment make it into the final motion?
Yep.
It did.
Yeah. Along with the shifting of the language, the original motion was for a 2% increase to this tax bill, and so that was also amended to be a 1%, and then plus 0.5 and 0.5 in the two successive years. Now, my hope and intention is that between now and then, we'll be able to actually achieve some more positive movement on some of the challenges that are. Wiping out our business districts, especially our small local serving business districts, and provide more sort of targeted supports. So in the meantime, this is a largely symbolic sort of move to sort of send a signal to the business community that, yes, we do take the issue quite seriously and we're working on it.
Okay.
And I'm hoping that we don't necessarily have to commit to a full 2% over the next 3 years, that we might actually be able to do more better sooner.
Right. Well, it's interesting because I know that you heard from a few business improvement associations, and at the News Collective, we were looking into BIAs a bit and realized that these associations, they often have more landowners than actual business tenants. And so I'm wondering...
That's exactly right.
Yeah. So do you see commercial landlords who are also, you can argue, small business owners or business owners, as the same as a sort of small business owner, like a mom and pop shop, that kind of thing?
No, they're not. Right. They're certainly not. And in fact, I challenged the Strathcona BIA on that very notion, because I know I live in Strathcona, and I know that the small mom and pop shops are largely non-existent now. We've lost most of them, and they've been replaced by big players like Chip Wilson coming in and buying up properties and setting up these sort of new tech zones and really actively gentrifying the neighborhood. And,
right.
And as the largest single property landowners, they pay the lion's share of the BIA's budget too, because of course BIA is paid through property tax. They allocate a portion of the property tax to support the BIA's. So I do fully recognize that there is that challenge involved. Mm-hmm. But that being said, the challenge for us as a city government is that we don't have a lot of tools at our disposal.
Mm-hmm.
So we have one, you know, so BC assessment through provincial legislation assigns different property classifications. There's 8 of them. And there's basically like one for class 6, which is business, comma, other. And then there's another one for utilities and another one for light industrial and another one for heavy industrial.
Mm-hmm.
But business, comma, other, class 6 is sort of the catch-all for pretty much everything that we consider when we talk about small business. There is not a distinction for, you know, differentiating between, say, you know, the Walmart
mm-hmm.
or the Pulp Fiction books or Stormcourt Tavern or, you know what I mean? There's really, it's just a one-size-fits-all catch-all for commercial real estate. So that's the challenge that we're faced with. We're further confounded by the fact that the province, the BC Assessment Office, are the ones who go out and determine the value of of these properties. So all that we as a city do is assign a mill rate, which is the sort of tax formula that is applied to the assessed value that the province assigns based on the classification that the province gives the property.
Right, and the province is assessing value based on potential development.
Yeah, highest and best use is what they base that on. Right. And increasingly sort of, transit issues and that kind of thing.
Right. And so from what I understand, staff was recommending split property tax assessment. Yeah.
So the split assessment conversation has been going on for a number of years. And again, the challenge is that that requires the province.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't actually have the power to do it. And because that particular conversation has been going on for a number of years and there's been no successful resolution, and in the meantime, we're hearing loud and clear that small businesses, and I mean like actual small mom-and-pop type businesses, are suffering and can no longer afford exorbitant land value increases compounded with the disproportionate burden that we put on commercial tax.
Mm-hmm.
They're dying. And we can't just sit on our hands and wait for the province to step up on this.
Right.
And we have to recognize to a certain degree that this is a Vancouver problem because we have these hyperinflated land values. And of course, it's happening throughout Metro, but it's really concentrated here in the city of Vancouver. So,
right. Yeah. I mean, but what would you say to the criticism that the savings that are made by commercial property owners will just be passed on to their tenants? So it's basically helpful to people who own their own property as well as their own business, but only helpful in the very short term to those who are renting as business owners.
Well, most commercial leases are on triple net anyway. So the whole triple net premise is that you just pay the property taxes, whatever it is, as the renter. So that's sort of how the system is kind of set up for the most part. The market sort of has defaulted to that being the way. So, I mean, this will most likely result in direct savings for the majority of small businesses in the city. But I should say that they're pretty modest savings. These aren't like really make or break a business kind of savings. And I think that's part of where it becomes a somewhat symbolic gesture, but I think it's an important signal to send because, we're a new council and we have a staff who have priorities that have been, established by 10 years of the previous government. And, the previous council, it was pretty interesting. We had a Vancouver Board of Trade breakfast event with Mayor Kennedy Stewart in attendance. Mm-hmm. And the head of the Board of Trade stood up and he said, well, this is amazing because this is the first time the mayor has joined us in 10 years. And I thought, mm-hmm. Everybody's jaw pretty much dropped to the floor because, this is the biggest trade organization in the city of Vancouver. And no matter what your politics are as the mayor of Vancouver, you're sort of obliged to show up. And of course, to Mayor Stewart's credit, he does show up. But I think it's sort of indicative of possibly a different direction, which is not to say we're just a rah-rah pro-business council, because I don't think we are. And I almost didn't vote the way I voted last night. I was certainly vacillating on that particular issue.
Yeah.
But I was swayed actually by a letter that I received as I was in council from a friend of mine from the dog park who talked about his business having to, he's leaving town. And I thought, wow, there you go. He's got a good manufacturing/retail business in food service. And he treats his employees really well. He's here in East Van. He's got a great business and he's leaving town.
Yeah.
And, and I thought about all the people that I know who work for him and what are they going to do? Are they going to now have to commute out to wherever it is he's moving to? I mean, that's,
yeah. So what do
that
you,
that really is unfortunate. And,
well, so for other councillors who voted against this motion, which, just passed 6-5, and, for example, Gene Swanson has, mentioned how Walmart is going to receive $13,000 savings. Would you say that they maybe aren't seeing that this motion might change and that you might not actually go all the way to the 2% property tax shift? Like, do you think other councillors maybe aren't seeing that this is still malleable?
It's a difficult political move to make to go out and say, hey, we're going to raise your taxes in any context. So you know, I think we're dealing with the immediate, you know, the immediate motion at hand. And for all intents and purposes, it is a 2% shift over 3 years. And there wasn't really any. I mean, there was conversation back and forth getting to that point. I know, you know, a couple of the councillors were really bullish on 2% right away. Mm-hmm. And I wasn't prepared to support that. So they had to kind of compromise because I was made it pretty clear I'm not going to vote for just a straight 2%. But I did want to send that kind of signal. So I think we all see that there's the potential to shift this narrative maybe in the next year. And I think that we all see that there was some serious intent from all the councillors and the mayor that we do need to do more to support like local serving small business in our city. So that was a pretty clear commitment that was made. And I think this might kickstart some more meaningful movement in that direction. I know the mayor really made a point of reiterating his commitment to work with the province on the split assessment issue. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's been lingering. That file's been lingering for quite a few years, but I have a lot of faith in Mayor Stewart that he's a man of his word and he's going to, you know, take that on. So I think this has forced that conversation. I mean, I was very reluctant to go against staff, of course, because this was staff's recommendation to not do the property tax shift. And we had a tax expert there recommending that we don't do this.
Yeah.
Which in part was why, you know, 1% for me was a more palatable option. And that buys us a little time. And maybe we won't have to do a different shift next year because we're going to revisit that because we have some kind of tool that's better targeting the kind of people that really need our support. Because Walmart doesn't need our help.
Yeah.
That's a given. But, you know, there's unfortunately, the way the Assessment Act is set up, we don't get to distinguish between Walmart and Pulp Fiction books.
We'll let you go. I just wanted to end on one note just to make sure I'm understanding you correctly. It sounds like, you know, you put a lot of thought into this and you have criticisms of this motion that passed to over 3 years shift 2% property tax from commercial properties to homeowners. But you sort of see this as a way to push forward this really important conversation about how we can relieve small business in Vancouver and make it more affordable for them to live and thrive here. Is that more or less what you're saying?
More or less, yeah. I mean, I would probably qualify. It's more of a shift from commercial to residential class. It's not just homeowners, of course, because residential class does include, you know, rental properties as well. And we did hear from Landlord BC, who it was funny because Councillor Swanson had a difficult time reconciling the fact that she was heeding the advice of Landlord BC, who normally she's not the biggest fan of. But no. But Landlord BC cautioned that this would impact their members, and they would have to pass those on, and that they're constrained by the Resident Tenancy Board limits on, so RTB has, you know, rent increase limits that are set by the province every year.
Mm-hmm, of course.
So that does play into an additional factor. I would argue that I think BC assessment, and I'm a big fan of us looking at how we can change the Assessment Act to add different property classifications. I'm not of the opinion that rental property classification should be in the same lump as home ownership property classification or strata condo class property classification. I don't think that's appropriate. But as it stands, just like Walmart and the local small brewery is lumped into the same category, we have rental apartments and luxury mansions lumped into the same residential category. So there needs work on how we, I think in many respects, the Assessment Act needs some updating and some more nuance. But again, that's largely out of our control. All we can do is advocate and, you know, work with. And I've had conversations with folks from the assessment office, and there's not necessarily disagreement there, but it's a slow moving process.
Well, thank you very much for your time, Councillor Fry. We appreciate it.
Yeah, always a pleasure.
Okay. Thanks very much. Yeah, you as well. Bye-bye.
Bye.
And yeah, so that was Green Councillor Pete Fry giving his perspective on the city's new property tax shift motion that passed in council on Monday night. But yeah, you're listening to Democracy Watch on CITR 101.9. We got a short break coming up, but after that we have an interview with former Sauder School of Business professor Dr. Stanley Hamilton. And in this interview, Dr. Hamilton will explain why he advised council to not pass this property tax shift. Stay tuned.
I'm gonna do it wrong. I'm about to spit in this mic like freestyle elfin, you know?
Okay, okay. Wait, hold on. Does this make sense?
No, but who cares? All right, let's go. Finally, we... You're not even gonna last. All right. Victoria's pretty good, not bad festival, fountain, just back from France, Montreal. What the f***? It's the script. I couldn't even. What? Victoria's pretty good, not bad festival. Fountain, okay, just back from France. What are you even saying here? Oh, you're trying to say these are the things featured in this one. You should probably specify that, because even a fucking elf couldn't understand that, okay?
Think you can do better than an elf? At CITR, we want to have a variety of voices on the air. Want to write scripts? Do some voice acting? Broadcast your creativity? Volunteer with the CITR Production Department. No experience? We can also train you in everything required. Send an email to psas@citr.ca to learn more. And don't wait to get your voice on the air.
At Dunkin' Donuts, each and every
radio show
is brewed fresh and served fresh at the peak of its flavor. If you're a tough customer, only the taste of this
radio show
will do. So go ahead, let Dunkin' Donuts make your
radio experience
exquisite.
Indeed.
Dunkin' Donuts, serving sweet treats from the Pop Underground. Thursdays, noon to 1.
And we're back. You're listening to Democracy Watch on CITR 101.9 FM. It's 5:39 p.m.
And coming up, we've got an interview with Dr. Stanley Hamilton. Dr. Hamilton, he is a former UBC business professor. He has also been the chair of two City of Vancouver public inquiries on property taxes. He worked with city staff on this property tax shift motion and advised council to actually vote against it. We reached him by phone on Wednesday afternoon to ask him why.
I wanted to start out pretty big picture, actually. Could you tell me could you tell our listeners how property tax works in Vancouver?
Well, basically, it works the same as it does in all other municipalities. The provincial government will assess every property in the province, and they will provide their estimate of the assessable value, which you can think of as mostly market value.
Right.
So it's an estimate of market value. They split it down between land and improvements, which is of little consequence to anybody except the City of Vancouver. The property tax property owners have a right to appeal. And once they appeal and a decision is made, we come to a revised final assessment rule, and so the City of Vancouver is told they have X number of properties in each of nine classes, and here's the assessed value of each of them. And then the city says, okay, my team in the other room has been preparing a budget, and we know the assessed value, we know the budget, and we know how much of the budget we want to collect from property tax. We simply divide one by the other and get a mill rate, which you could think of as a tax rate expressed as a tax rate per $1,000 of assessed value. And from a local government point of view, they can have a different tax rate on each of nine classes of property. So for the City of Vancouver, think big picture. They have a group of residential classes and they have a group of commercial classes. Mm-hmm. And the discussions that you listen to last Monday and the previous week were all about the distribution between the commercial classes and the residential classes.
Okay. I was just going to clarify, too, then property tax makes up the majority of a municipal government's revenue. Is that correct?
About 60%. Mm-hmm. And then on top of that, from the homeowners or from the property owner's point of view, they also have provincial property taxes. And, you know, they're called school taxes, mm-hmm. a tax for the Municipal Financing Authority, a tax for BC assessment. So a number of taxes, which are almost equivalent, if not more than, the property taxes generated at the local level.
Right. And do businesses have these additional provincial property taxes?
Yep. Absolutely do. Yep, mm-hmm. absolutely. And so you can basically think if the city says they want $100 from you, the total bill is probably $200.
Right.
When you add the province, yeah.
Okay. And then I'm wondering, can you tell our listeners how things are for small business in Vancouver right now? Like, just generally, are small businesses as a whole struggling, or are they doing well right now?
There's no hard evidence. There, you know, there's everybody listens to somebody and tells a story. But mm-hmm. you know, I don't think there's any question that small businesses are having a challenge, whether the challenge is simply property tax-based or whether it's competition is quite another story. Mm. I mean, the Amazons of the world have had an amazing impact on retail operations.
Right. And when you spoke to city staff or when you were advising council with city staff, the presentation suggested that small business rates have actually been small business tax rates have actually been declining in recent years. So you're sort of saying that perhaps the reason small businesses are struggling, if they are, is because of larger forces of globalization and giant companies like Amazon.
Well,
that's
not the only reason. I mean, taxes on some small businesses, property taxes, have gone up quite dramatically because many small businesses are in older buildings. There probably might be a one-story building or a two-story building, but the site itself is zoned for 6, 8, 10 stories. Mm-hmm. So the market value of that site is based on what it could be used for rather than what it is used for. And what happens in many, probably the majority of commercial operations, particularly small operations, is they operate on what's called a triple net lease.
Right.
So you sign a rent, a base rent, and then you agree to pay all operating expenses, including the property tax.
Okay.
What's happened on some of these development sites is that the market is putting a premium on these development sites because they want to develop them. Mm-hmm. And so the value is well beyond the value of the current use. And on a triple net lease, that falls on the shoulders of the small business, the tenants.
Right. Yeah. And so one of the criticisms of this tax shift is that when it comes to businesses who are renting a property, the tax shift will only benefit them for the duration of their current lease.
Current net lease.
Their current net lease, if they have a triple net lease?
Yeah.
Okay.
If they have a gross lease, like virtually everybody that rents residential is on a gross lease, it won't help them at all because their gross lease covers everything.
Right. And then the landlord would just up the cost of rent to maximize profit.
Absolutely. I mean, that's a rational approach by the landlord.
Right. So that was something that you warned council about.
Oh, yes.
Right.
Yeah. Also warned council that by giving what would end up as a 2% shift, mm-hmm. 1% this year, 0.5% the next 2 years, we told council that what you're doing is... Commercial is a very broad category.
Yeah.
So don't think you're helping small business because you're also helping, you know, Cathedral Place, Bentall Tower, Oakridge Shopping Center, Walmart. They're all being helped by this shift.
Mm-hmm.
And the point that we tried to make is if you're really worried about small business, this is a very blunt instrument. And if you look at the net effect, the 2%, take it over the 3 years, the 2% on a $10 million property is probably about $1,800 a year or $150 a month. But you're giving an equivalent percentage to the Bentall Centers, the Cathedral Centers, the Oakridge Shopping Centers, the Walmart.
Right.
The argument by staff, and I supported staff, is that why not target the benefits? to small business instead of giving it to all businesses.
Right. So you're saying that because the percentage shift is so small, it actually will be giving a lot more of a tax break to bigger businesses that pay more tax versus smaller ones. Then, so if you and staff were advising that there should be a more targeted approach to help small business, how could the city have a more targeted approach? What did you advise?
Well, the city is working on two different plans at the moment. One of them is to look at these properties that have huge development potential and carving off the development potential separate from the current use.
Right, a split assessment.
Split assessment. The second thing they're looking at is some kind of small business class where they can have a lower rate of taxation, a lower mill rate. Both of those require some amendments by the provincial government, and that's what they've been negotiating on for at least the last 2 years, if not longer.
Yeah, we interviewed Pete Fry yesterday about this, and actually what he said was that he voted in part for this motion because he saw it as symbolic and as a way to motivate the provincial government through Kennedy Stewart, our mayor, advocating for the government, the provincial government, to do a split assessment or to create a small business class. Do you think that this tax shift motion that passed on Monday will act as a way to motivate the provincial government to re-examine how they're assessing property value?
No, not at all. I think the work that's going on in the joint committee is what's going to motivate the provincial government to move. I don't think the provincial government is going to give a hoot about a 2% tax shift. They're going to view that and say, well, that's the city of Vancouver's decision. It's got nothing to do with the province. And indeed, there's no evidence that the province will do a tax shift on their share of the property tax. There's no indication they would do that. So if you think of a property owner as having two tax bills, it actually all comes at once, but one part of it is the city of Vancouver, the other part is the province and all the agencies that tax property, you're giving this year a 1% tax cut to business, but the province, on their share, is not doing that. So in the total bill, that's about 0.5% of your total property bill on business that will be reduced and will be moved over to residential. And the concern that was expressed by staff, and again, I support it, is we've heard repeatedly from the city of Vancouver and from other municipalities that housing is a major, major, the major issue, the major issue. And what we've just, what the city has just done is to take tax from the commercial sector and put it onto the residential sector.
Right.
Was that a smart move? I mean, that, you know, I'm not a politician, and I must say I absolutely admire the care and discussion City Council put into this. It's a very difficult decision for them, but it does not solve the small business problem.
Right, and it does seem like it was a very complex issue that required a lot of thought, and I guess what seems to have come out is that because there hasn't been much done for small business, as Pete Fry was saying to us in an interview we did, over the last decade, councillors felt like they had to do something. Because if they hadn't done this, there was nothing they could have done immediately, right?
Well, short of reducing the mill rate to City of Vancouver charges, which means they would have had to reduce their spending budget.
Their operating budget, yeah. Which leads me to another question I have, which is that do you see the root of this issue being an issue of how to fairly spread out property tax in a municipal tax base? Because as we said, property tax makes up 60% of the revenue for a municipal government. So is this an issue of how to fairly tax your constituents, or is this an issue of the city government having an inflated operating budget?
Well, I think there's a third dimension. I'm sure we could all go to the city and say, why don't you cut this item or cut that item? But if I went in and said, you know, cut the donation to the bread factory, you'd go and say, no, 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 I love the bread factory. So, you know, they're facing tremendous pressure on where they could cut a budget. As to the distribution between business and residential, I told the committee and staff told council that they felt the share that's there today is reasonable. There is absolutely no evidence the business sector in Vancouver collectively is in trouble. In fact, it's very healthy. Vacancy rates are down. Building permits are up. Everything looks good collectively. But within that, the problem is within that collection, you're talking about hundreds of million dollars in a property and maybe $3 million in a property. And at the small business end, I'm sure some of them are struggling. Part of it, probably the tax bill. A large part of it, competition. But the other point the city, not just the city of Vancouver, but local governments face is they have very limited means of increasing revenue. Mm-hmm. They can't tax income. And what's happened in the last 18 months, as you're probably fully aware, is there have been a number of new taxes put on residential. Vacant home tax, the speculative tax, the so-called school tax, have all been heaped on residential. And now we've heaped another 1% shift on residential. And at the same time, we're saying we got to promote residential.
Right.
The difficulty is the city's doing more and more things over the last decade without having a corresponding increase in revenue sources.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, all the work on the drug problems in the city of Vancouver, that's not a city of Vancouver problem. That's a national problem, or at minimum, a provincial problem. And the city has not had added tools to fund those things.
Right. I mean, at the same time, though, the city operating budget is growing faster than the rate of inflation, and, like, city councilors received a 2.7% raise this year. Like, staff expenditures have, like, doubled in the last 10 years. It also seems like maybe the operating budget itself could be some fat trimmed in terms of staff salaries and maybe counselor salaries.
Well, I don't think most counselors take this job because of the money. And I think they're basically poorly paid for the hours they put in. But is there fat? Absolutely, there's fat in every system. No question about it. But that, I don't think, you know, if you and I got together and looked at their budget and went through it, I doubt that we'd find 3% that we had cut.
Right, okay.
And agree upon it. Might even not get that far. That's not the issue. You mentioned the budget's growing by more than inflation, but you got to adjust that for the growth in population as well.
Yeah, it's grown more to, yeah, even considering population.
Yes, it has.
Yeah.
But then you layer on top of that the growth in responsibilities, things that they have either elected to take on or been forced to take on because there's crisis in areas in the city. And it's not just Vancouver, It's local government in general.
Okay, well, that's very interesting. Thank you very much for your time, Dr. Hamilton.
Okay, pleasure indeed.
All right, and we're back. That was an interview with Dr. Stanley Hamilton, a professor emeritus at the UBC Sauder School of Business. So one thing I wanted to mention that didn't make it into our interview with Dr. Hamilton is that we did mention it briefly earlier, but it's key to remember we're waiting to hear back on the intergovernmental group. Is that what it's called?
Yeah
the
working group.
Yeah, the intergovernmental working group that's working with the province on a couple of key tools. And those tools are split assessment, which we've talked about. So assessing properties based on their actual value rather than the value that they would have if they were used to their maximum. So if a one-story building is in a four-story zone, it's currently assessed based on, like, the four stories it might be. And then they're also assessing, this intergovernmental working group is also assessing whether the province could create a small business class rather than having business properties all assessed in one giant group. So we have small and big businesses all lumped together. So we're just going to have a short discussion on this. And you are listening to Democracy Watch on CITR 101.9 FM if you just tuned in. So we're wrapping up our show. And I wanted to say a few things on this whole story on the municipal government in Vancouver's property tax shift of 2% over 3 years from business properties to municipal properties. So one of the things I found interesting that I learned while doing the story is that obviously property taxes are the major source of revenue for municipal governments. They account for about 60% of the money your local government has to do the stuff it does. But the provincial government also charges property taxes. And one thing that Dr. Hamilton brings up is that additionally now, recently, we have a couple more add-ons to the existing property taxes. So there's an empty homes tax, and there's also additions made to the school tax, which was already existing, which I didn't realize before. But as we've all heard, the so-called school tax, as people like to say, is a tax on properties, but now there's an added tax on properties valued over $3 million. So there's a lot of uproar that happened when the NDP implemented that last year. But one thing to note with those two taxes, the add-on to the school tax and the empty homes tax, is that is very much targeting a certain class of people, right? Like, so yes, there are more burdens. There are more taxes on homeowners, on properties owned by homeowners in BC. But like the add-ons recently are to wealthy people in BC, right? If you have a second home or if you have a home over $3 million. But that being said, having property taxes from the province and the municipal government, that's a lot. So yeah, that makes sense. And one thing Dr. Hamilton also said that was interesting is that he said now municipal governments are taking on more responsibilities and yet they don't have a new source of income. So I don't know. What do you guys think of that? Because to me, I'm not sure exactly what those new responsibilities are, but...
Something that I was just kind of thinking of is that I'm thinking back to... Oh, was my mic not on?
It's on. Just move a little closer to it, Josh.
Sorry about that, Alex. No, what I was just... I'm just remembering from back in December.
Yeah.
When the council had a vote on whether they wanted to write a letter to the province to ask them to remove the additional school tax.
Yeah.
And the Greens' motion, two of the Greens' reasons for supporting the motion was that they were claiming that the province was encroaching on their tax base.
Yeah.
And so it's like kind of, you know, this is an issue that for the municipal government has been an issue in the past.
Yeah, definitely. Totally. Yeah. A lot of councillors, the Green councillors, and I'm pretty sure all the MPA councillors are very opposed to the school tax. Mm-hmm. And they describe it exactly as such, encroaching on their tax base. And it is. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But was that I think that letter was to the add-ons to the school tax.
It was to the add-ons to the school tax, so not the school tax in general because that's been in place for a long time.
I'm sure they'd like to remove that too if they could. But so a bit of a takeaway from this is that local governments don't have a ton of power.
They do, right? Not.
Provincial governments allow local governments to exist. So, you know, the Vancouver government has to get the provincial government to change its charter, I believe, if it wants, you know, to make significant changes. So, again, like, you know, if they want to assess the value of different business properties, different properties under the category of business, they can't just create a small business category. They need the provincial government to do that. So, like, it's a lot of waiting around for the provincial government and sort of begging them to do stuff without a ton of power. Did you guys have any other takeaways, Armand?
Yeah. One thing I was thinking about is the use of stories, how, you know, when you have this kind of decision where, you know, you have a lot of statistics and you have a lot of uncertainty about how it's going to affect different groups, how all the councillors told a story of a particular individual and how that influenced their decision, that in a policy that's going to affect nearly every property owner in Vancouver.
Yeah, I think that's such a good point. And who brought that up? I think someone said everyone has a story. Everyone's affected by a story. I think it was Dr. Hamilton. And yeah, because this issue is like, you know, we're all talking here in the studio. It just like it's such a complex issue and you can look at it from so many different angles and see so many different complexities and really argue both sides pretty effectively. That's why, you know, council was so close on the vote. It was a 6-5 vote. But at the same time, so as a result of that, people tend to lean on like emotional antidotes, right? Like we heard Melissa DeGenova talking about how, you know, her daughter, right? How, like, you know, if she was a homeowner and needed the money or whatever, her daughter, thinking about how she might not be able to feed her daughter is, like, very upsetting. And then Rebecca Bly had an emotional story on the opposite end. And, like, Pete Fry changed his vote because he got a letter, right, from someone at the dog park.
We're still not sure what the dog park is.
We're not sure if the dog park is a literal dog park or if it's, like, a place, like, whatever. Anyway,
but
he
a coffee shop, maybe?
It could be a coffee shop. Is that what he... Yeah, he's a business owner, too, I think. So maybe it's his... Whatever.
I could just Google the dog park.
We could just Google it. But anyway, like, he got a letter from a business owner who was like, I'm going to leave because I can't keep affording to exist here in Vancouver. And that's why he ended up voting the way he did. Yeah. On the other end, you know, you hear rhetoric. Jean Swanson has said, you know, repeatedly, we just gave a tax break to Walmart. And Kennedy Stewart was saying that, too. And that's true, too. That's technically true, too. So... And what we were also debating here, where is Walmart in Vancouver? Is there a Walmart? What did we discover, John?
So I initially thought that there actually wasn't a Walmart in Vancouver because,
yeah.
I mean...
Because well, where is it?
Because
we
I just couldn't
think
I just
of
could
it.
Never remember having seen one in Vancouver before.
Yeah.
And I mean, I feel like, not to brag, but I feel like I know the city pretty well.
Yes.
You clearly. Do. But I actually Googled around and there actually is a Walmart in Vancouver. It's
yeah.
just... kind of deep into like southeast Vancouver.
It's on Boundary Road.
It's on Boundary Road, so pretty
Stones
much really close to really close to the
Burnaby.
Yeah.
So, thanks to the great journalistic efforts of the CITR News Collective, we have confirmed that there is a Walmart in Burnaby, and it
in
will get
Vancouver,
a tax break.
Actually.
Sorry, Vancouver. Accidentally saying the wrong thing there. Well, we're 3 minutes after six. The news show is over time. Thank you so much for tuning in to CITR 101.9 FM. Up next, we have the Spencer Latu show. I think that's what it's called. It's definitely mm-hmm. led by Spencer Latu. So stay tuned for that. And
does he have a show on CITR by any chance?
He does.
Whoa.
Oh, are you being funny?
I'm trying, but I'm not funny.
Okay. Spencer Latu's up next. Thanks for tuning into CITR. We'll be back again next Thursday at 5 p.m. with more Democracy Watch. And subscribe to our podcast, Seeking Office. So, all right. Take care.